disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please consider supporting us. Head over to www.deadsoulspodcast.com and see how you can donate to our research and investigations and find other ways to support us. We really appreciate you stopping by. You can also find us over on Instagram if that's more your thing. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. As always, thank you for joining us. How does a nurse commit the most evil and unthinkable murders? A person who has dedicated their lives to saving the lives and caring for others. How does that transition from angel to demon happen? And how does it go unnoticed for so long? Lucy Letby is a serial killer. A court of her peers found her guilty on August the 18th, 2023, of the murder of 7 babies and the attempted murder of 6 others. That dark truth remains that we may never know why she became a murderer and committed the crimes that she did. I very rarely cover current crimes on this podcast. I prefer to touch on historical events where the records are complete and the story whole. Tonight's story is an exception, however. The story and guilty verdict only broke some 24 hours ago from when I'm recording this. The reason I'm covering this case tonight is due to the significance of the crimes. The emergence of a new and documented serial killer is somewhat of a rarity post-2010 in comparison to what it once was. Indeed, the 1970s, for example, serial killers were 7 times more common to what they are today, and even then, in that decade, there were still less than 300 serial killer cases. Simply put, surveillance cameras, DNA science, cell phones, GPS tracking, advancements in forensics and criminology, and finally, huge strides in policing and crime prevention technology have made the ability for a criminal to commit regular crime and get away with it significantly less possible or likely. So when a new serial killer does emerge, I'm keen to see what their crimes were, how they committed said crimes, and what was the reasoning and rationale, at least in their mind, for their unspeakable actions. Tonight we discuss the child killer, Lucy Letby. One doctor subtly described it as quite simply the safest place in the world. A place where newborn babies, some smaller than even their parents' hand, would take their first gentle breaths in this world. A place where every tiny heartbeat is measured and monitored. A place of celebration and joy to thousands of families, and a gateway from which a new life would enter the world and leave with their family for a full life ahead of them. A hospital neonatal unit is perhaps by definition safe, sheltered, and secure. Every year around 90,000 babies are born in the UK that require neonatal care after birth. The British National Health Service data suggests that around 94% of all babies that receive neonatal care will go home with their families as healthy and happy newborns. So to imagine a killer stalking the quiet, hopeful corridors of a hospital's newborn baby wing is perhaps to push back the very frontiers of what many think of as evil. That a young, smiling woman in her 20s wearing her blue NHS scrubs could carry out these callous and heartless crimes is somehow even worse. Deplorable. Deceptive. The name Lucy Letby will now be seared into the national conscious in much the same way as Myra Hindley, Rose West, and Mary Ann Cotton. The now 33-year-old neonatal nurse was convicted yesterday, or August the 18th, 2023, for those listening at a later date. She was convicted for murdering 7 newborn babies and attempting to kill a further 6. This makes her the worst baby killer in British history, not a celebrity most would wish to be known for. In balance, she was cleared of 2 counts of attempted murder, with the jury also being unable to reach verdicts on 6 further attempted murder charges relating to 5 other babies. So, what turned this young, university-educated children's nurse into a cold, calculated, cruel, and relentless baby killer? How did she carry out such unthinkable murders within the confines of an institution which is designed to save the most vulnerable of lives? And perhaps the most difficult and pressing question, why? Why did she want to do what she did? Why did she do it? Just why? To be very clear, and in true Dead Soul Social Club fashion, we are going to derive all our information and data from the court transcripts and official public records. None of tonight's episode is sensationalist information or drama derived from word of mouth, much like many of the tabloids that are now circulating. Fact, as always, is key, and indeed more furious than fiction. Let us start by taking a look at who Lucy Letby is. Letby was born in Hereford, a small cathedral city situated on the River Wye in England. She was born on the 4th of January 1990, an only child to John, now 76, and Susan, now 62. Both are described by friends and neighbours as well-liked and respected in the community. Letby grew up in a picture of a middle-class England. The family were Christian and regularly attended church together. It was a general consensus amongst the locals that Lucy, from childhood to her current years, had always been described as vanilla, beige, and outright average in every way. Letby was subsequently educated at Islestone Comprehensive School, followed by Hereford Sixth Form College. From a young age, she always wanted to work with children, she said. Unlike those she would now be compared with, i.e. Rose West and Myra Hindley, there were no signs of a traumatic or abusive childhood. On the contrary, she had a very close and loving relationship with her parents, and was openly a daddy's girl. Her upbringing was positively idyllic. Whilst armchair true crime watchers might think that leaves her a blank canvas or somewhat of an enigma to psychologists, it doesn't. But we'll return to that in a bit. Lucy eventually pursued her education in nursing at the University of Chester, where she also worked as a student nurse during her 3 years of training. She carried out placements at Liverpool's Women's Hospital and the Countess of Chester Hospital. Letby was the first member of her family to study at university and graduated on September 2011 to much pride from the Letby family. Following university, Lucy secured a role as a neonatal nurse at the Countess of Chester Hospital. Her family didn't like the thought of her living in cramped staff dormitories, so her parents, who lived a couple of hours south in Hereford, had helped Lucy purchase a nicely kept £179,000 three-bedroom house near to where she worked. Lucy lived alone in her home in the small city of Chester, on a quiet middle-class street of neat lawns, expensive cars and privet hedges. Her neighbours were either retired or families with children. Although the neighbours hardly saw her, Lucy worked long hours and regularly volunteered for overtime. In the small amount of spare time that Lucy did have, she went to the gym and took salsa classes. She told jurors during the trial that she had quite an active social life, although her life clearly revolved around work. She was a thorough and fastidious journal keeper, writing down work shifts in blue ink and social engagements in pink ink, ticking off items that she had completed. She documented her thoughts, feelings, and most of her daily activities. She was thought to be quite popular among some of her fellow nurses, two of whom she counted as her best friends. When questioned during her trial, she referred to them as her own little family. None of her friends or colleagues testified on her behalf during the trial, however. Ex-colleagues are keen to distance themselves from Lucy, though. They describe her matter-of-factly. She was unremarkable. She didn't stand out as a particularly bad nurse. She didn't stand out as a particularly good nurse. Nothing excelled with her, said one senior colleague, questioned under oath. Many may suspect Lucy Letby as having some form of psychopathy. Those who observed her in court saw a defendant coldly detached from the allegations that she faced, often staring impassively from the glass-paneled dock as jurors heard the most harrowing and heartbreaking testimony. including from her parents who witnessed their baby's horrendous screams and others who saw tiny limbs contorted in seizure during their final moments. One father made a statement which was read to the court. He described the haunting image of his triplet son's last moments on earth. He said, "You can see his veins, bright, bright blue, going different colors. He looked like he had prickly heat. You could see something oozing through his veins." Letby just stared ahead. She later dismissed the father's testimony from the witness box, saying, "I can't comment on their truth. I didn't see anything like that myself." Some parents recalled watching the oddly cheerful nurse grinning as she bathed and dressed their dead babies. They would only learn years later that their child had not died of natural causes as they had thought, and that the woman who performed this post-mortem ritual was in fact the person who had murdered their baby. Those babies who survived were not always the lucky ones, though. Two of Letby's victims, a girl who is now 8 and a boy, now 7, both sustained brain damage as a result of her attacks. The girl, who was born 15 weeks early and initially given only a 5% chance of survival, has since been diagnosed with quadriplegic cerebral palsy. She is nil by mouth and requires 24-hour care. It was not until the 16th week of the 36-week trial that Letby would show any emotion. The emotion, however, had nothing to do with her victims. A married doctor, which Letby was said to be infatuated, arrived in the courtroom to give evidence against her for the prosecution. The prosecutor suggested that Letby was having an affair with the doctor, the name of which cannot be revealed here currently for British legal reasons. Letby told jurors that the doctor had been her best friend, although she had not worked with him for very long. Police investigators found his name written in diary notes, which they recovered from Letby's bedroom. Alongside the scroll notes about the doctor were lyrics to a Craig David song that read, "Love was all we needed, but time let us down." Police evidence revealed that the pair regularly exchanged Facebook messages, went for meals and walks, and he visited her at her home on a number of occasions. After Letby was removed from the neonatal unit in July 2016 amid suspicions about her connection to unexplained deaths, she and the doctor went on a day trip to London and continued to meet regularly, exchanging text messages with love hearts. He wasn't aware, but she had searched for his wife on Facebook and visited her personal page on several occasions. The nature of their relationship was said to be significant, albeit a strange one. He was one of the doctors who would be called when babies suddenly deteriorated. He held senior responsibility on the neonatal unit. It was suggested during the trial that Letby had harmed the babies in an attempt to get his personal attention. As the doctor confirmed his name from behind the screen that shields witnesses from the view of the defendant, Letby started loudly crying and left her seat and attempted to open the door to the court cells. 4 months into a distressing and harrowing trial, and this would be the first time Letby would shed a tear. Before 2015, the Countess of Chester's neonatal unit was like any other in England. A team of around 30 nurses and 7 paediatric consultants provided 24-hour care for hundreds of premature babies each year. Some of the babies, under the care of the unit, were born as much as 12 weeks early and weighing as little as 450 grams or 1 pound. The prospects of such extremely premature babies can be good with the right level of care despite being born in what doctors call the margins of viability. Evidence shows that for every 1,000 premature babies born in the UK each year, fewer than 2 will die, which is a remarkable and extremely positive figure. So as a comparable figure, the data for the Countess of Chester neonatal unit shows us that during an average year, only between 1 and 3 babies would die under their care. This is from an annual occupancy of between 1,500 to 2,000 patients. That was until 2015. Over just a 14-day period in June that year, Three infants died suddenly, and a fourth deteriorated rapidly without warning. The babies had been otherwise stable, still only a matter of days old, but expected eventually to go home with their parents. Letby had other plans. Just minutes after clocking in for her night shift on the 8th of June 2015, Letby injected air into an intravenous long line connected to a baby boy who was born just the previous day and prematurely by 6 weeks. The baby was a twin and was born prematurely along with his twin sister. The boy collapsed immediately. Doctors rushed to resuscitate him as his mother, who was at the time in a wheelchair recovering from the labour, sobbed and pleaded, "Please don't let my baby die. Please don't let my baby boy die." Attempts to save the boy failed, and he was pronounced dead at 8:58 p.m., within just 90 minutes of Letby coming on duty that evening. That same night, the boy's father stood awake, guarding over his sleeping daughter's cot, meters from where her twin brother had just died, adamant that his baby girl would be protected at all costs. Relatives of the twin girl took it in turns to watch over her for almost 24 hours, staying with her until 8 p.m. the following night, fearful that whatever happened to their boy would also not happen to their little girl. Cruelly and sadly, 8 p.m. was the time that Letby came back on shift. But the family were unaware that the nurse taking care of their baby's needs was also their children's reaper. The little girl's alarm sounded shortly after midnight. All of a sudden, she looked desperately ill. Whatever was wrong with the baby seemingly came out of nowhere and could not have been predicted. The trial here that despite having had no problems in her first 48 hours of life, one of the nurses shouted, "Oh no, not again," as doctors tried to resuscitate her. Hospital staff noticed that her skin was rapidly changing colour in odd purple and white patches that they had first seen the night before happening to her brother. "Not my baby, not again, please," wept her mother. The doctors eventually managed to save the girl's life, but she would remain in hospital for another month before she would be able and allowed to go home. During the trial, it was revealed that records from Letby's phone showed that she had searched Facebook for the dead twin's mother on several occasions. The first instance was shortly after finishing the shift on which she murdered the one-day-old boy. She then searched again the night after attempting to kill his sister. She searched for the mother again around 2 months later. It was also revealed that Letby had searched online for many parents of the babies that she treated. Letby also admitted so under police questioning. Police would find the records of 2,381 Facebook searches on her phone in the year to June 2016, approximately 200 a month. Searches were for the parents of the 17 babies included in her trial, and they had a disturbing pattern. There were also searches for many other parents. Letby often searched for the victim's parents within a matter of minutes, seemingly lurking for grief. She even searched for several of the dead baby's parents on Christmas Day 2016. In just a matter of days after she had attacked the twin babies, Letby murdered another two babies. There was no rational explanation for the sudden collapse of the four-day-old boy and two-day-old girl. The situation was again strange and entirely confusing to the doctor and nurses at the scene. Doctors were struck by the strange discoloration of the baby's skin. It would also later become clear that three of the four babies had been deliberately injected with air through an intravenous line into their bloodstream, what would become apparent as Letby's most common method of attack, jury was told. The change in skin colour was a phenomenon that many consultants had never seen before, but it became a hallmark of Letby's crimes, almost like a criminal calling card, even though no one knew it at the time. The injection of air into the bloodstream of a human being is not a commonly known technique as something that can cause quick and undetectable death. It's something that those in the medical field would recognize, however, which should have rang alarm bells to those who looked into the deaths at the hospital. Dr. Stephen Breary, the head pediatric consultant at the neonatal unit, has the calm, measured, rational temperament you would expect of a children's doctor. Even he was disturbed by the three deaths in just a 14-day period. He immediately reviewed the baby's care and, besides a few minor learning points, there was nothing he could identify to explain why the babies had died so unexpectedly, strangely. Then Dr. Breary looked at who was working at the time of the deaths. There was just one nurse was on duty for each death, Lucy Letby. Dr. Breary took the findings to Alison Kelly, who was the director of nursing. He explained that the mortalities were still unexplained, but added there was one common link between all the deaths. "It can't be Lucy. Not nice Lucy," Breary said to her. It was unthinkable to imagine that a nurse was harming babies in a neonatal unit. So the suspicion was all but dismissed the instant that it had been raised. It was the first time Letby had been identified as a potential suspect, even to a loose standard. At the time, most colleagues in the unit felt that Lucy had just been unlucky. "My initial feeling towards Lucy Letby was that I felt sorry for her," the pediatric consultant Dr. John Gibbs, one of Letby's colleagues, told the Guardian newspaper in an August 2023 interview. "She happened to be around when some of these babies were collapsing and dying, and perhaps it was purely coincidental. When it kept on happening, it began to look like this cannot be just pure coincidence, however." Over the following year, a young nurse poisoned two newborns with insulin, pumped other babies full of air, overfed a baby with milk, and caused trauma to one baby's throat by tampering with his feeding tube. Almost all newborns were attacked at night, often moments after their parents had left. A number were targeted when their nurse had briefly left the room for a few moments. On other occasions, Letby injected newborns with air and deliberately overfed one at the end of her shift so that the babies deteriorated under someone else's watch. It was no secret that Letby was present when the infants suddenly collapsed, yet her crimes were so subtle they were unnoticeable. Trainees at the hospital started to refer to Letby as the Angel of Death. It was certainly not the first time that a practicing doctor or nurse has murdered patients under their care. A name from recent memory being Dr. Harold Shipman, for example. It is also almost certain that it won't be the last time that it occurs, as horrific and frightening as it is to admit. The key is learning from the lessons of the past to ensure the same methods aren't repeated in the future. The government of the United Kingdom announced yesterday that an independent inquiry would take place into the Letby case. Families of some of the babies attacked by Lucy Letby have said the inquiry into the case is not enough, given its non-statutory standing. Authorities should have powers to compel witnesses to come forward, the family announced through the law firm which represents them, Cardiff-based Slater & Gordon PLC. One of the reasons Letby was able to get away with it for so long was because no one saw her harm any babies, and she was adept at covering her tracks. Although there was one night where she was allegedly almost caught in the act. At about 9 p.m. on the 3rd of August 2015, a mother arrived on the neonatal unit with expressed breast milk for her 5-day-old twin boys, who were referred to in court as Child E and Child F. The boys were born 11 weeks premature, but had made such good progress that they were due to leave Chester for a hospital closer to their own town. As their mother arrived, a horrendous scream pierced the dimly lit corridor outside nursery number 1. She immediately rushed in and saw Letby standing near Child E's incubator. Her son had fresh blood around his mouth and was in extreme distress. Her mother asked Letby what was happening, and the nurse, who wore a yellow butterfly sticker on her name badge, reassured her that he was okay and the blood was just from a feeding tube which was rubbing his throat. "She should go back to the postnatal ward and rest," Letby said. The mother bought Letby's story. 2 hours later, the doctors were racing to save Child E's life. He had lost more than a quarter of his body's blood, and the skin on his stomach had turned a strange purple and white colour, similar to the discoloration described for three of Letby's previous victims. Child E was pronounced dead at 1:40 a.m. His mother was completely broken by a loss, but allowed Letby to bathe her dead son before wrapping his 1.4 kilogram, or 3-pound body, in the smallest white gown that Letby could find. His brother was her next target. This time Letby tried a crude new tactic. She poisoned Child F with insulin. Child F had been prescribed a very small dose of insulin to help raise his low blood sugar levels 2 days after his birth. He was also being fed fluid nutrients from a bag connected via an intravenous long line. In the early hours of the 5th of August, and just 24 hours after his twin brother had died, Letby injected insulin into the bag connected to Child F and added even more to a replacement bag that would be used when the first ran out. If the first did not kill him, the second almost certainly would, Letby's actions would ensure. The 5-day-old boy's heart rate rose exponentially, and his blood sugar levels plummeted. One of the boy's legs began to swell rapidly. The doctors, once again perplexed, changed the baby's fluid bag to the replacement that Letby had also sabotaged, and they saw no improvement. The insulin was still dripping into Child F's body, and the doctors were completely unaware. It was only when doctors removed the second fluid bag did the baby begin to recover. Results later showed that Child F had extremely high insulin levels along with a very low C-peptide level in his blood. It was unfettered proof that someone had administered a large, unprescribed dose of insulin to the baby and that a poisoner was at work. It would be weeks before these results came back, however, and when they were read by doctors in the unit, the significance was not immediately clear. One senior doctor who analysed Letby's victims said they were selected carefully, not chosen at random. Almost all the babies had other vulnerabilities, such as extreme prematurity or inherited conditions. These gave Letby plausible deniability when they died. Intelligent thought had gone into the murders. Any deaths on the unit were described by doctors as unexpected and unexplainable. They were also extremely rare. Any baby who was present on a neonatal unit meant they were often incredibly fragile, and Letby's victims were often the most vulnerable of those. Many needed round-the-clock care and focused treatment rather than just needing feeding and monitoring. Letby tried to kill one boy less than 12 hours after his birth by ramming a nasogastric tube down his throat, using his haemophilia as cover to explain the severe bleeding. Letby also appeared to target siblings too, given that three sets of twins and one set of triplets were among her victims during 2016. The timeline of her attacks show bursts of brutality in June in 2015 in particular, three murders and one attempted murder specifically, and again exactly a year later. Prosecutors don't know if this holds any significance. In between, the assaults would be spaced out more. In just 10 days in June 2016, for example, Letby murdered two triplet brothers and attempted to kill another boy, either side of a two-night trip to Ibiza with a nurse colleague. By now, the prosecution said that Letby was out of control and enjoying playing God with her defenseless victims. Letby heard that identical triplets had been born on the day she returned from Ibiza. She was due to return to work the following morning, and Letby texted friends that she would be, and I quote, back in with a bang, lol. A reference that she insisted under oath during the trial to the hospital unit being busy rather than anything sinister or untoward. The triplets, three brothers, were all in good condition. Letby was assigned responsibility for two of them, Child O and Child P. At lunchtime on the 23rd of June 2016, when the boys were not even yet 48 hours old, Child O's heart rate increased and his stomach ballooned. Child O's father stated that the baby's stomach expanded like E.T.'s stomach from the movie. It was really strange and unexpected. The Parents recalled from the labor ward as child O suffered two serious collapses. There was a state of panic on the unit as doctors tried in vain to save the newborn. The mother, who was just recovering from labor, sat outside the intensive care room in a wheelchair, unable to bring herself to go closer. Child O was pronounced dead at around 6 p.m. that same day. Doctors had to tell the grief-stricken parents that they didn't know why he had died, but they gave them their reassurances that their remaining two babies were safe. They wouldn't know what was lurking just around the corner. Letby, just 13 minutes after murdering Child O, had immediately set about killing one of his brothers. The nurse pumped air into Child P's stomach as she fed him milk, shortly before the end of her shift. The baby luckily recovered overnight after Letby had left to go home. Then, within only 90 minutes of Letby starting her work shift the next day, Child P collapsed again. Both parents recall vividly the horror of the hours that followed. The father of Child O and P said that the hospital unit was in sheer pandemonium as doctors tried frantically to save the second triplet. They were hurriedly embarking down a road that they had only trodden some 25 hours prior. As Child P struggled to breathe, Letby chillingly whispered to a doctor colleague who was working on the baby and said, "He's not leaving here alive, is he?" An ambulance team arrived to transfer Child P to a specialist hospital, but the ambulance was too late, and Child P collapsed one final time. He was pronounced dead at 4 p.m. The parents of the triplets begged and pleaded with the ambulance team to take their surviving baby to Arrow Park Hospital, where Child P had been due to go. They were petrified that their third and final remaining baby would suffer the same fate as his two brothers, and they wanted to waste no time in getting the baby under the observation of specialist doctors. The ambulance crew agreed. Lucy Letby was said by numerous witnesses to be in floods of tears as she brought the two dead triplet babies into a private family room before their bodies were taken to the mortuary. The mother of the triplets, in a statement to the police, said that Letby was in pieces, almost as upset as we were. But who were the tears actually for? These would be the final murders for a killer nurse who was, by then, completely out of control, a statement that the prosecution told jurors. Letby searched Facebook for the triplets' parents on the first anniversary of their death. When asked in court about the searches, Letby claimed that what she referred to as the harrowing experience had stayed in her mind, haunting her, adding, "You don't forget something like that." Yet none of this harrowing and haunting expression of emotion was present in court during the trial for some reason. Much of the evidence in the 9-month trial was so medically complex and contested that it was difficult to know what the jury were making of it, or even if they fully understood what was being discussed. They heard about a week of evidence for each of the 17 children that we know of that Letby attacked. The medical records for just one of the babies alone ran to more than 8,000 pages. In addition, there were more than 5,500 pages of witness statements and 32,000 pages of exhibits and evidence, such as text messages and photographs. The jury were given a 25-page glossary of medical terms prior to the trial beginning to help them better understand the case and its contents. The jurors in the case were ultimately left with the same question as everybody else. Why? Prosecutors suggested the motive was a simple one, that Letby enjoyed playing God, and she got nothing more than a kick out of the excitement of killing babies. Or was it down to the attention that she craved from the doctor whom she was obsessed with? Letby denies all charges and denies purposefully harming a single hair on her baby's head. So I guess, at least not at this juncture, we will find out her motive anytime soon. Lucy Letby explained to the jury that she wanted to look after the most seriously ill babies, that she was a Band 5 nurse qualified to care for the most delicate of patients in the intensive care neonatal unit. She would even complain and moan to colleagues when she was not assigned patients who were the most in need of help. Observers of the trial have commented that the details of the case draw similar parallels to that of Beverly Allitt, a case from 1991. Following a trial and public inquiry, the details of Allitt's case laid out do reveal stark similarities to Lucy Letby and her crimes. Allitt was a nurse in her 20s when she killed 4 babies in her care and attempted to kill a further 3 babies while working as a nurse at a children's hospital unit. Allitt had used insulin and air bubbles to inject into the babies in order to murder them. The explanation for motive that was given in the Allitt case was that she suffered from Munchausen syndrome by proxy, suggesting that she harmed her victims in order to win the sympathy of others. Like Allitt, Letby seemed to enjoy the attention she received when the babies in her care collapsed. For months and months, senior doctors and consultants on the neonatal unit had raised a number of concerns about Letby's link to the growing number of unexplained deaths of patients under her care. It would not be until July 2016 that her sickening crimes would come to an end. The hospital board removed Letby from the chest and neonatal unit following the unexpected deaths of Child O and Child P, two otherwise healthy baby boys. Following these two deaths, the senior staff on the unit demanded that Letby be removed. The hospital board was still uneasy at the decision, however, given lack of any evidence. Lucy Letby was initially moved to a clerical role in the hospital's risk and safety office. It would still be almost a year before the Countess of Chester Hospital NHS Foundation Trust would contact the police in May 2017 with suspicions of murder. During her trial, Letby spoke of this specific period. She said, "It was devastating. I don't think you can be accused of anything worse than that," while still maintaining her innocence throughout. It would be another 14 months before Lucy Letby was arrested at 6 a.m. on the 4th of July 2018. She was back in her Chester home after returning the previous night from a holiday with her parents in Torquay on the Devonshire coast. Her father was in the house when the police came calling, having stayed in the house the previous night. John Letby watched on as his only daughter was led out of her quiet suburban house in handcuffs and still wearing her nighttime clothing. Throughout police questioning, her time on remand awaiting trial, and during the trial itself, Lucy Letby continuously protested her innocence. She instead blamed the deaths on the incompetence of her colleagues, poor resourcing at the hospital, and the babies themselves being in poor medical conditions. Her defence largely crumbled under cross-examination, however. Detective Chief Inspector Nicola Evans of Cheshire Constabulary said the lack of clues in Letby's background made her a completely unprecedented serial killer, and that there isn't really anything we have found in her background that's anything other than normal. She operated in a really average way, but being average has allowed her to go under the radar, and it's allowed her to operate in plain sight. These are truths that send chills down your spine when you realise that there are horrific criminals out there that current criminologists cannot identify or distinguish. During the criminal investigation, the insulin poisonings were initially the closest detectives had to a smoking gun. There was very little other evidence in this case. There was a strong chance that Letby would walk away from the trial as a free person. But following a search of Letby's home, and in particular her bedroom, police found something that changed the course of the investigation and left them quite stunned. You'll recall earlier we discussed how Letby was a detailed note taker and journal keeper. Well, within a diary decorated with a teddy bear on the cover and inside a pink leather handbag were a jumble of notes filled with hundreds of scrawled words written in black ink. On green and yellow post-it notes, Letby had written, "I killed them on purpose because I'm not good enough to care for them," and, "I am evil. I did this." Letby claimed under oath that they were the ramblings of a person in crisis. Detectives saw them as the confessions of a serial killer. As soon as Letby was removed from the neonatal unit in July 2016, the deaths stopped. Over 3,000 babies have been through the unit's doors in the years since Lucy Letby has left, and the hospital has recorded only one single death. The final verdict. On August the 18th, 2023, Manchester Crown Court announced Lucy Letby has been found guilty of murdering and poisoning babies at the Countess of Chester Hospital. More than 10 months after the former neonatal unit nurse's trial first began at Manchester Crown Court in October of 2022, the jury of her peers found her guilty of 7 counts of murdering babies and 7 counts of attempted murder on 6 more babies. After 110 hours and 26 minutes of deliberation, the 22 charges and the jury's decision in their entirety are thus. Count 1. Murder of child A, a baby boy, on June 8, 2015. Guilty. Count 2. Attempted murder of child B, a baby girl, between June 8th and the 11th, 2015. Guilty. Count 3. Murder of child C, a baby boy, on June 14th, 2015. Guilty. Count 4. Murder of child D, a baby girl, on June 22nd, 2015. Guilty. Count 5. Murder of child E, a baby boy, on August the 4th, 2015. Guilty. Count 6. Attempted murder of child F, a baby boy, on August the 5th, 2015. Guilty. Count 7. Attempted murder of child G, a baby girl, on September the 7th, 2015. Guilty. Count 8. Attempted murder of child G on September the 21st, 2015. Guilty. Count 9. Attempted murder of child G on September the 21st, 2015. Not guilty. Count 10. Attempted murder of child H, a baby girl, on September the 26th, 2015. Not guilty. Count 11. Attempted murder of child H on September the 27th, 2015. No verdict. Count 12. Murder of child L, a baby girl, on October the 23rd, 2015. Guilty. Count 13. Attempted murder of child J, a baby girl, on November 27th, 2015. No verdict. Count 14. Attempted murder of child K, a baby girl, on February 17th, 2016. No verdict. Count 15. Attempted murder of child I, a baby boy, on April 9th, 2016. Guilty. Count 16. Attempted murder of child M, a baby boy, on April 9th, 2016. Guilty. Count 17. Attempted murder of child N, a baby boy, on June 3rd, 2016. Guilty. Count 18. Attempted murder of child N, on June 15, 2016. No verdict. Count 19. Attempted murder of child N on June 15, 2016. No verdict. Count 20. Murder of child O, a baby boy, on June 23, 2016. Guilty. Count 21. Murder of child P, a baby boy, on June 24, 2016. Guilty. Count 22. Attempted murder of child Q, a baby boy, on June 25th, 2016. No verdict. Lucy Letby, a serial killer, a child killer, will be charged for her crimes on August 21st, 2023.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.